has perished from the earth, and there is no one upright among mankind. They all lie in wait for blood, and each hunts the other with a net. Their hands are on what is evil, to do it well. The best of them is like a briar, the most upright of them like a thorn hedge. So put no trust in neighbor. Have no confidence in a friend. Guard the doors of your mouth, even from her who lies in your arms. For the son treats a father with contempt. The daughter rises up against the mother, the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's enemies are the very people of his own house. As Micah looks around at everyone, he says, there is no one upright. And these are the ordinary, everyday folks who are practicing injustice towards one another. But injustice here isn't just the evil action. Injustice can also be by inaction. It's knowing the right thing and refusing to do it out of fear or apathy or laziness or comfortableness. Those actions or inactions can be unjust as well. So what is justice? In the Old Testament, there are two words that are often associated with the word justice. We're going to practice our Hebrew today. The first is the word mishpat. It doesn't even show up on the screen. It's more like Ugaritic. Okay, everyone say the word mishpat with me. Perfect. Hebrew scholars in our room. Mishpat is a word that's often translated as justice. It's used more than 200 times in the Old Testament, and derivatives from this word are used an additional 200 times as well. Mishpat is how you and I would often think about justice. It's about righting a wrong. It's also translated as the rule of law or the rights that are afforded to an individual. This is the word that Micah uses here in chapter 6, verse 8, whenever he says, act justly. At its core, mishpat is giving people what they are due, whether that's punishment or protection or care. It's about equity and equality for all, justice for anyone who is wronged. So the word mishpat is our first word, but there's another word used throughout the Old Testament related to the idea of justice. That word's a little bit harder. It's tzedakah. So try it with me. Everyone say tzedakah. You're doing far better than I am. All right. Tzedakah is the word that means righteousness. It's got a few adjective forms as well that mean righteous. Between those two words, it's used 197 times in the Old Testament. Tzedakah is a life lived of right relationships, right with God, and therefore committed to putting everything right with one another. It's about having right relationships in all of life. It's what's doing what is right and good and honest and fair towards all. And in the Old Testament, these words are often found in connection with one another. They are used separately, but oftentimes the writers put them together in the same sentences. For righteousness and justice are synonyms with one another. One cannot be truly righteous without practicing justice, and one cannot be just without understanding what is good and right and holy. Indeed, one Old Testament scholar I was reading this week said that mishpat, or justice, is about setting the wrong things right, rectifying a situation, punishing wrongdoing, and caring for victims of injustice. But righteousness is about primary justice. It's a way of living and being and acting that, if we all did it, would make mishpat unnecessary, because we would treat each other rightly and fairly and equitably. In essence, we would be living out what God tells us to do when He says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. And these two words, righteousness and justice, are part of the very character and essence of God. These are God's identity. Listen to how God describes Himself in Jeremiah chapter 9, verse 23 through 24. This is what the Lord says: let not the wise boast of their wisdom, or the strong boast of their strength, or the rich boast of their riches. But let the one who boasts boast in this, that they have understanding to know me, that I am the Lord who exercises kindness, justice, and righteousness on earth. For in these I delight, declares the Lord. Did you hear the radical message that's there? God delights in righteousness and justice. This isn't something that God just kind of cares about. God takes joy and pleasure when we practice these things. Because when we do what is right and we do what is just, then we are reflecting the character of God Himself. For God cares about the poor. Gustavo Gutierrez is a Latin American theologian who originally was born in Peru, but now teaches at Notre Dame up in Indiana. And he once famously stated this, that God has a preferential option for the poor. Now, the first time I ever heard that phrase, I didn't like it. And to be fair, reading it today, I don't still like it. Because in my heart, I think, well, but God treats everyone fairly and with equality, right? We're all equal in the eyes of God. And God states that over and over in the Old Testament. Absolutely, that is true. But He challenges us in how we think about what equality really is. I want you to think for a moment, what are the regulations that were given to Israel as you go back to the Old Testament law? Because most of them had to do with this: take care of the vulnerable, the oppressed, and the marginalized among you. Those that no one else cares about or cares for, those are the people you are to look after. When you go out and you harvest your fields and you drop a sheaf of grain behind, don't worry about it. Leave it there. Consider it an offering to God and let the poor come and take what they need. Don't harvest the edges of your field. Leave that for those who need food. God states you should have the same law for the immigrant as you have for yourself, something that seemed just an anathema to anyone at that day and age. He challenges them to a form of radical equality, and the fact that all slaves would be freed every 7 years. And every seventh year, the 50th year, they were to celebrate a year of Jubilee in which all of the economic debts were canceled. All land was returned to those who owned it. And everyone at some point in life had the chance to hit the reset button when the year of Jubilee would come around. And as God talks about doing all these things, He says, do them because you were once slaves in Egypt. We looked at some of those verses last week, but He says, you know what it was like to be oppressed and vulnerable and overlooked. And that is your story. So treat everyone with fairness and justice. In fact, as God talks about Himself, He talks about Himself as a defender of the defenseless. A God who shows no partiality and accepts no bribes, but defends the cause or the mishpat of the fatherless and the widow, the foreigner living among you, giving them food and clothing, and treat them this way because you were foreigners in Egypt. God considers Himself the liberator and the provider of those who need it, for He says, I am a father to the fatherless and a defender of widows, the Lord in His holy dwelling. And I said, all those who are lonely in families. In all of this, He is telling us that the marginalized matter to God. Those considered on the outside in our society have a central place in His heart. For He frees the oppressed, He comforts those who are lonely, and He welcomes those that others shun. And as I think about all of this, I'm amazed. I am amazed how God, the Creator and King of the universe, decided to dwell with His people. Think about the life of Jesus Himself. When God put on flesh and dwelled among us, He chose to do it in an incredible way. He didn't come as a noble or a king. He wasn't wealthy or well-to-do. Instead, He chose to be born as Jesus, a rather common name given to a common crying baby who arrived to a poor, scandalized carpenter and his wife surrounded by barnyard animals. He was born into a family of immigrants that in the first few years of life traveled to and from the land of Egypt and who eventually settled into a tiny backwater town called Nazareth. So small that everyone asked, could anything good come from there? And I dislike Gutierrez's statement. And we can argue today whether or not God gives preference to the poor. And we can feel uncomfortable, as I often do, with what Gutierrez says. But God does seem to go out of His way to identify with the poor and to become like them. And as we come to the book of Micah, we are called to a life of justice. The people, the common everyday folk, have complained, what more do you require of us? We do what is right and just and fair in worship. We offer the sacrifices. Come on, is there something else you really want? They thought they were covered, for they came and they worshiped and they gave and they sacrificed. That's what God told us to do in the Mosaic Law. And to be fair, I often feel the same way in my own life. We often feel that the spiritual life is primarily about what happens at church. Now, we might believe and say differently. Faith is about how we live in the world, we might say. But I want us to think for a moment. And this last week, have we lived differently? Does your faith and your life of faith consist of more than what just happens here on Sunday mornings? Because God wants more from us than just showing up on Sundays. More than just checks in the offering plate, more than just singing praises or taking communion. Now, I don't want you to walk out of here and hear me say that church is unimportant or that any of these things don't matter. I'm not knocking church attendance or singing or giving or taking communion or serving in the church. All of those things are wonderful and amazing and sacrifices to God. God here isn't, in the book of Micah, isn't using Micah's prophecy to shoot down Jewish religious practices. He's not knocking their sacrifices. He's not telling them to stop going to temple. For God, those things are important too. But he is saying there's more to godliness than just this. At church and church, there's more to our godliness than what happens here on Sunday mornings. Micah's words spoken to his audience are just as impactful for us. And he has shown you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. So what is justice? It's probably more confusing for you now than when I started 20 minutes ago. And that's totally okay. We've touched on that theme last week and this week. And as we move into next week's discussion of mercy, we're going to try to put more legs on it, help it make a little more sense. But I think justice is about more than just the righting of wrongs. Justice is about both how we consider justice and the idea of righteousness. Justice requires us to see others with the eyes of God. It means that we stop thinking of ourselves as better than others, and instead that we see all people as being made in the image of God, just some images out of focus a little bit more than others. It means we begin to see our possessions not as a mark of our own success or of our godliness, but instead as a way to practice our godliness as we serve others. It requires us to not just think of our own desires and needs, but to think of what is going to be best for everyone. It requires us to see people as people and not just as statistics. Justice makes us realize that first world problems aren't really problems at all. Justice calls us to fight against unjust systems educationally, judicially, politically, economically. And it requires us to not just throw money at problems, but to invest in people for long term. And we'll talk about that more next week. As Jesus himself reminds us, we need to go out and remind ourselves what it means when he says, "I desire mercy, not sacrifice," in Matthew chapter 9. Our worship isn't just about what happens here on Sundays, although that is wonderful. It's about bringing justice into the world. So I want us to imagine ourselves in a courtroom, just as Micah is asking his audience to do, for he opens with a scene of judgment. Imagine that you are the defendant, a very uncomfortable place to be, that we're on trial for our justice. How unjust have we been? That could be active or it could be passive. It could be turning a blind eye to the needs of the world. It could be changing the channel rather than changing a life. But if we were to ask, how would we plead? How would you plead? And I'm not certain I like the answer for myself, because I like to be comfortable. But God is calling us to more. He's calling us to justice. We serve a good God, a God who identifies with all kinds of people. And that is amazing. And that is life-changing. And it means that we serve a God who isn't, as we'll see next week, that God balances both justice and mercy. Because none of us, if we were honest with ourselves, want justice. If we stand before the judge of the universe, I think we all want a little bit more mercy. at least as we think of justice as justice. But what is amazing about God is that he says, I love everyone. And I am a father to the fatherless. I am a helper to those who need help. I am the defender of widows. I am a God who extends righteousness and justice and mercy to all. And that gift is freely given if you want it. And there's nothing we can do to earn it. The things that we do out in our world don't make us better Christians. They don't earn our salvation. They're simply a reflection of the goodness of God that is being realized in our own lives. Because God says, mercy is only given when we accept Jesus. And it's an invitation he offers to any and everyone, wherever you are, in whatever circumstance, justice and mercy are available to all. If there's any way we can help you this week, if we can pray with you, pray for you, rejoice with you, help introduce you more deeply to God, just hold you while you cry, whatever else, that's why we're here. That's why the church in part exists, to extend God's mercy and justice and love towards all. We have a time set aside for an invitation if you'd like to come forward. If not, catch somebody in the back and just pour out your heart if you need, or just ask them to pray for you generically. And just say, hey, I need love and encouragement this week. We serve an amazing God. And we'll continue talking about this theme as we move forward. But if there's any way we can bless you right now, we offer this time. Come to the front as we stand and as we sing.